Yeah, you are listening to Intuit. I'm Daniel Welsh and I'm with Rachel McGraw and Ash Percival. Today we're talking reality TV secrets, looking back on an old favourite and dishing on the Oscar nominations. But first, how are yous?
Ah, good, thanks.
Yous good? Yeah,
thank you.
I'm grand, as always. Happy to be in your company. Let's talk, first of all, about the biggest story of the week, which is what everyone's been talking about. It was Ewan McGregor pulling out of Good Morning Britain. He was supposed to be on Tuesday morning, but when he found out that Piers Morgan was the host, he tweeted, I've got it right here because I always come prepared, was going on Good Morning Britain. Didn't realise at Piers Morgan was host, won't go on with him after his comments about Women's March. So Piers came out and said that he should be big enough to allow people different political opinions. But what I want to talk about with you is, do we think that this is something that Good Morning Britain should maybe be fearful of for the future if Piers Morgan's mouth is going to cost them A-list guests? Rachel, what do you reckon?
I would really like it if they were worried about that. I know that's a really weird way of putting it, but I just think that good on you and McGregor for doing this. Piers Morgan is not a very agreeable man. He is quite shouty at guests. And I really do hope that this is making them think about the future and wondering about whether they'll have trouble with others.
I think definitely, yeah. I mean, he was on to promote Trainspotting, the sequel, which is obviously the biggest film, British film out right now, certainly. And so he's cost them a really important interview. So like trying to put our own personal feelings for Piers Morgan aside, Ash, do you think that maybe they should be concerned that their host is blabbing on Twitter and costing them really big names?
If you look at this in the context of Piers Morgan is doing a job and he has these views, if he was doing any other job, if he was working in our office or working, I don't know, in a cleaners or whatever, and was airing these views to a wider platform, I think he'd be pulled up on it. But yeah. I think just because he's working on a TV show,
really,
it's kind of being encouraged, which I'm kind of like, why is that? Why is that being allowed in that way? And I think maybe it's because bad publicity is good publicity, and as far as the show is concerned, it's making headlines and it's probably getting people to tune into Good Morning Britain to see what he's going to say next.
That's the thing, isn't it? It's not that it's Ben Shepherd, who's been employed by MTV or ITV for that matter, to and come in and surprise everyone by talking about this. It's Piers Morgan, who's always been a very controversial figure. Certainly in the last couple of years, his views have been, it seems like he's saying things deliberately provocatively to get headlines.
Even in the last 6 months, I think he's kind of seems to have, there's been like a new era in the world of Piers Morgan. Like I'd say he's kind of ramped it up massively.
It's gone Katie Hopkins in a way.
Yes. I mean, the thing is, I think he would admit to being a bit of an egomaniac in that. So I guess if he's getting headlines just through literally going on Twitter, 140 characters, saying whatever pops into his head, and he suddenly gets 10 Google alerts, then he's like, oh, I can do this and whatever. And so I guess bosses are kind of pleased that they're getting headlines out of it. But on the flip side of that, they're getting headlines, but now it's at the cost of these guests, these celebrity guests like Ewan McGregor and Patrick Stewart as well. When Ewan tweeted that, Patrick Stewart said, I'm standing right there with you, Ewan. So that's another A-lister who won't go on and sit with Piers Morgan.
Well,
this could easily be a domino effect from here on.
It could turn out that he's kind of set a precedent, because what he's done is he's said, I don't agree with Piers Morgan's views, therefore I'm not going on with him. And people who would never have thought of taking that stance might now kind of think, well, actually,
or people who wanted to take that stance but may not have been brave enough
to. It's kind of like he's set that now that it's kind of, it might be okay to do that. So it'll be really interesting to see if anyone else follows suit.
Do you know what? And I also wouldn't be surprised if this is the first time it's happened. I mean, obviously it's the first time it's publicly happened, but behind the scenes, who knows what's gone on? Ewan McGregor might not be the first person.
What I would just like to say as well is, obviously Piers Morgan is entitled to his view, and his view about the Women's March is a view that a lot of people have, but it's the fact that he has the view and then he pushes it and pushes it and pushes it. He says, and Susanna Reid said the same thing, actually. Susanna Reid, who has different views to Piers and often puts them down, we should point out. They both said, it's a shame he didn't come on and debate it. What do you think about that?
I just think, why should he have to? I'm kind of like, I tweeted this at the time, but I'm sort of sick of this idea that people who say things like what Piers said, which I personally just couldn't disagree with him more. Oh, we'll have a men's march. We need one of those. I'm kind of sick of this idea that we have to interact with that. Like, why did Ewan McGregor have to give that viewpoint the time of day?
The thing is, as well, with Piers Morgan, it wasn't just that he said, I don't agree with the Women's March. It was that he was laying into the people who were doing it. It wasn't just, I don't agree. It was, I don't agree. And I think that you, I think you're wrong in saying that they're rabid feminists and that they're, degendering men by having this
it's
march.
It's just like, why should we have to interact with that? Like, no, basically.
And that's what the other thing is. Piers Morgan, at the end of the day, he's a breakfast TV presenter. Like, I know that he's had journalistic past, great, cracking for him. But at the end of the day, he started off doing the Sun's Bazaar column. He's ended up doing Good Morning Britain. Why should I actually care what he thinks about a big political movement?
The thing is, though, it's kind of like completely flipping it on the other side. It's, if you're going to go on there to promote a film, you're not. You might disagree with anyone's politics. I could disagree with Susanna Reid's politics. I could disagree with anyone's kind of viewpoint. You kind of have to put that aside. And I think in that context of that interview, politics wouldn't have come up in that conversation.
The thing is, though,
so it's how high you value that.
Yeah, we should say as well, Piers Morgan did say that he wouldn't have brought politics into it. I don't know whether I believe him or not, because, you know, he had Joe Wicks on, for example, a few weeks ago. And it looked like he stipulated he didn't want to talk about his private life. And then here comes Piers Morgan to talk about it. Sorry, Rachel, I just talked over you there. What were you going to say?
That's okay. No, it's just
in a Piers Morgan-esque move, actually.
Susanna Reid's not on Twitter, like, pushing her politics, like, right to the front. Piers Morgan will, like, literally shout over people on Good Morning Britain. And he won't put his politics aside for his job. It's something that he regularly lets into the studio and onto the sofa. So Ewan McGregor's got complete grounds to assume that that's something that will happen. Like, if he wants people to put them aside, then he needs to be prepared to put them aside as well, and he just isn't.
What I can say is you wouldn't get it from Holly and Phil on This Morning.
What an opinion.
Save it up and go on This Morning.
No, you wouldn't. You might get a clumsy innuendo or a full hangover, but I think an opinion, no, that is hard to find post 10:30 on ITV. Moving on from that one, Celebrity Big Brother is still going on. We're into about week 12 or 13 or something at this point.
You sound exhausted at that thought, Daniel.
I am kind of exhausted. I don't know how they wake up in that house every day. I think we're 3 weeks in at this point, right?
Three or four weeks in.
Chloe Ferry has left the house for good now. She's been evicted, former Geordie Shore star. But it's turned out since she left the house that actually she took a secret trip out in a shock move to do a photo shoot for Geordie Shore. Now, when HuffPost UK contacted Celebrity Big Brother, and by HuffPost UK I mean you, Ash, the Big Brother said that she left the house for prearranged commitments. She was chaperoned by a member of production and had minimal contact with the outside world. But none of this was in the show. So what I want to say is, do we think that it's wrong to keep viewers in the dark about this sort of thing? Or does it really not matter in the long and short of it?
Yes, no, it does completely. Big Brother is a show that was born on the premise of having no contact with the outside world. And you can argue that in its 17, 18 years it's been on air, it's a very different beast to what it was. But the premise of the show still stands, as far as I'm concerned. And if you're not going to show this kind of stuff, people are going to have an opinion about it, and people are going to have something to say about it.
Yeah.
Which is why this is a story.
Yeah, my issue isn't so much that she's left the house, because as you've just said, it is a completely different programme to what it was when it started in 2001 and you had Anthea Turner and Vanessa Felt scrolling on the table. It's completely different.
Glory days.
Yeah, that, I mean, that series was like 6 days long. Now, as we've just said, it's a month long. It's a completely different show. It's more the fact that she's left the house and they've just kept viewers in the dark.
They've essentially lied to us.
Well, I mean, it is. It's not. I mean, it's lying by omission, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which I think is a fabulous court term that I've just thrown out there because...
Get you.
Yeah.
Judge Rinder over there.
Oh. Rachel, what do you reckon? Do you think that this is something they should have told viewers, or does it really not matter?
I think that they should. I think that the idea, the way that they kind of, you know, they don't tell you at all, assumes that people won't find out when obviously they will. But I think it should return to how it was. If you're going to sign up, you sign up for a month, you are locked in the house and you don't come out.
No contact with anybody outside.
I just think that, yeah, if you're going to commit to it and you're going to do it, they need to set the precedent that people need to do it properly.
So I read somewhere, this might not be true, but I read somewhere...
Oh, I love her this might not be true precursor.
Come on. But apparently she was only signed up for this series of Big Brother 24 hours prior to her entering the house.
Oh, my God.
So it smacks to me that they thought probably we need someone desperately to inject something into this house. Who can we get in on a last minute basis? And actually they've gone, well, I've got this thing on that I can't get out of. And they've gone, we don't care. We want you in the house. Like it smacks of desperation and scrambling.
They want to sort their diaries
just not planning
out.
Stuff.
Do the planning properly. Like, and just set the rules. It's Big Brother. We all know how it works. Like, do you use some organisation?
What I would say as well is, last year we had a few things that didn't make the final edit, which was quite controversial. I wrote a feature about it, which you can read now on the Huffington Post UK. Nice little plug there. But so stuff like last summer, there was Stephen Bear. He got 4 or 5 warnings. And fans of the show were kicking off saying that he wasn't getting any. And it was because those warnings weren't getting shown. And also, there was Christopher Biggins, who literally made an anti-Semitic comment that he was later thrown out for, but the comment wasn't aired in the first place. And so what I'm concerned with is, fair enough, Chloe Ferry's leaving the house and it's not deemed important enough to be told to the viewers. But it's like, if they're not going to tell us that, then what else are they not going to tell us? The whole premise, as you've just said, Ash, is that, you know, it's 24 hours, it's fly on the wall. We're meant to see everything and go on this journey with them. And so if there's other stuff going on...
I've got 3 things to say.
Oh.
Firstly, it's a reality TV show, so you should be showing us the reality of what is going on in the house. Therefore, if Chloe is leaving the house, we should be shown it. Yeah. The second is to do with Bear and the stuff that went on last year. I think part of the reason that it should have all been shown was the fact that it made that behaviour look completely legitimate when it wasn't. And when you're showing stuff that's to do with social issues, behavioural issues, you should be showing the consequence of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Thirdly, and I've completely forgotten what my 3rd point was.
Cliffhanger.
Oh.
Yeah, I have
Biggins?
Forgotten.
Was it to do with Biggins?
No.
All roads do
I've
lead back to him.
I've my 3 points.
Do you want
now,
me to... I've got something and you can see if you can think of it. Okay. I think one of the reasons why they've got no excuse is because they've got such a big online platform. You don't necessarily have to put Bear's warnings in the show. Put them on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly.
Just upload them separately
and
have them there.
But they've got a limit to the stuff that
they
can
put on
the internet.
Yeah, like, okay, fine, you've only got a 60-minute slot on Channel 5. You've got other things you want to broadcast. Put the footage elsewhere. And also, when it's online, I'm not sure on the exact rules, but things like Ofcom and stuff like that, you can maybe be a bit more lenient when it's on an online platform. It's not like they've got no shortage.
I have remembered what I was going to say. I was also going to say, this isn't the first time that people have been leaving the house sneakily. This has been going on for years and years and years. Like, yeah. So Rylan, when Rylan was a housemate, was leaving the house to go to X Factor rehearsals for the tour. And in Katie Price's series, Katie Price was going out for consultancy to do with her boob jobs. And Patsy Kensit was getting spray tans in the diary room.
I mean, it is camp that Patsy's getting spray tans, though. I don't mind that so much.
Oh, I'd love to see Patsy getting a spray tan.
That would have been brilliant.
It would have been nice to see her in that series doing anything other than shake violently in the sitting room waiting for them all to stop arguing. On that lovely Patsy Kensit-themed note, I'm going to move on because this week it was 10 years since the first ever episode of Skins aired on E4. So obviously we're all mid-20s, we're all millennials. We remember Skins, don't we? Yes, folks, back it up, yeah. We remember Skins. It was massively culturally impactful. What I want to say is, do you think it's time that they kind of brought, maybe it's not Skins back, but something like it back? Because it feels like, to me at least, that there's not something like that for young people, you know, late teens, like that right now.
I think it would be really cool. Like, Skins was really, like, kind of era-defining, I think, for us. Like, everyone remembers it, especially you kind of had, like... I obviously watched, like, we all probably watched, like, the first generation, as they call it. And then they kind of brought in a second and a third. And yeah, I think it would be good to have something like that. Like, it showed a lot of issues, I remember, that weren't shown anywhere else. And if they were, they definitely weren't shown in a way that I could relate to or that made sense to me.
I think what made Skins so good was that it didn't talk down to the people who are watching it. It treated teenagers seriously. It was like, look, this is what your life's like. Well, presuming this is what your life's like.
My life certainly wasn't like that.
Well, mine wasn't. I didn't watch Skins because it just depressed us how lame my life was.
It made me feel uncomfortable.
I would just watch it and be like, oh, I'm in bed at 9 o'clock
on a Friday.
Was it,
Rachel?
My mum would be like, were parties really like this? I'm like, no, of course not. This is stupid.
It's actually, yeah.
Go back to school.
Skins was way tamer than that, wasn't it?
Skins was actually a documentary of Rachel's life.
But I'm just saying, is there anything for teenagers now that is like that? Because it feels like all the stuff that we watched when we were teens, not to sound like a curmudgeon old man or anything, but like all the stuff that we watched when we were teenagers, it was quite edgy and quite irreverent and quite stupid at times. And it just feels like right now, teenagers haven't got anything like that.
I feel like teens are like the forgotten generation now. It's like, although we live in a world where, you know, TV is becoming less important and we have online and we have YouTube and we have Netflix and all that stuff, there isn't anything youth-related. Like, you look what we used to have back in the day, we used to have T4, we used to have, like... CBBC used to be broader. It used to have like more appeal to older kids. Now it's just aimed up to age of 12.
Yeah.
You know, and we had all these US shows. We had like The OC, we had Dawson's Creek, we had 90210. Like, we haven't really got anything like that anymore.
Yeah, and they were all, you raised a really good point. They were all shows that were showing issues that were related to young people.
Yeah.
Do you think it's that, like, these bosses at networks just think, oh, the teens are watching YouTube, we'll just not bother?
I think they just get dismissed for that reason. I think everyone just automatically places them in that sort of, oh, well, they'll be, like, watching stuff online. And I don't know, maybe there is research out there to suggest that is true. And
I think it could probably be a bit of a vicious cycle, really. Like, there's nothing there for kind of teens 16 to 25 to watch, so they're not watching it. So then the bosses are like, well, they're not tuning in, so we're not making it. And I think I can imagine that it just goes round and round, so no good ideas come out of anything.
Yeah, and I feel bad because you watch these, I mean, I don't want to slag YouTubers off because they are obviously good at what they do and they do get millions of views, so somebody must be interested. But it feels like you watch those YouTubers and they ain't edgy. You know what I mean? Like, they're trying to sell you stuff, basically. And I know that's fundamentally the base of all media and whatever. But, like, Skins, it was edgy and it was cool. And it just feels like there's nothing like that. And I think American teenagers, maybe the culture's different and they'll want to watch something a bit glossier and a bit more polished. But Skins wasn't like that. Yeah. It was
Skins
not.
Skins was very, very unique in a way that I don't think the US dramas did in the same thing. It's like, it was very sort of realistic and gritty, and it sort of didn't gloss anything over in a sort of high-gloss American way.
It was quite working class as well, wasn't it? And that's another thing that's just, there's nothing like that on TV right now.
Well, it's interesting, I think, as well, that when they tried to do the US version of Skins, it completely flopped.
Never translates, does it?
Lasted one series and had to cancel it.
I think the thing is, it was really smart, and also it treated the characters' problems like the real problems that they are. You know, when you're a teenager and you look back and you think, okay, maybe that wasn't a big deal. But at the time, Skins was really good at saying, like, well, no, this is a big deal. Like, this character is struggling with his sexuality, and this is a thing. And it just put things like that front and centre. Mm. And I think it was just really important to do that.
I think
that.
As well, like, I really remember it because I was the same age as the characters at the time.
Same.
I was 17, 18 when that show first came out. And I just remembered, like, although I wasn't living the wild lifestyle that these characters were, a lot of the things that were being raised and they were going through and they were questioning or talking about it, I remember thinking, if that's not me, that's someone I know.
Yeah.
They were all completely relatable.
If you don't recognise yourself, you see someone you know in there.
Yeah.
So basically, if you're listening, we want maybe it's not Skins, but new Skins, new generation of Skins for the young people. Because let's face it, Zoella ain't bringing Skins. She ain't. To finish on, so the Oscar nominations came out this week, everybody, and loads of our faves are up. Nicole Kidman's up, Viola Davis, Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone, Dev Patel of Skins
of
fame.
Skin fame.
Nice link there. They're all up for nominations. And Meryl Streep.
That's nice, 10 years on.
Yeah, it was literally it was like a day later from the anniversary.
There's Ruth Negger as well was from Misfits, which was another great teen show. She's nominated for an Oscar too.
Is she?
Yeah.
Oh, cracking. Well, there we go.
Well done, E4.
Learn some Oscars trivia. Meryl Streep also was nominated for an Oscar. It's her 20th acting nomination, which makes her the first woman ever to be nominated for 20 acting roles. So in the spirit of the Oscar nomination news, I thought we could finish on a nice Oscar nomination-based game.
Nice.
So following on from Play Your Cards Right, we're going to play Your Stars Right. Nice.
Interesting.
Nice. That took me literally 4 seconds to come up with. So I think you
could have done with more work.
Give it a bit more kudos,
it
all right?
Shows.
So basically, I'm going to shout out some names and I want to know whether you think they have more or fewer Oscar nominations, not wins, nominations than the person before them. So if I tell you that Matt Damon has 5 nominations, does Jennifer Lawrence have higher or lower Ashley Percival?
So is this in, just to clarify,
not being
a stickler for rules or anything, but is this in just in one specific category? Or
no,
like
this is
overall,
including not just for acting.
Right. So including the films that they're in?
No, just for them personally.
As individuals. Okay.
I'm glad that we've got those rules out there. More T's and C's can be found if you DM me on Twitter, everybody.
We should get a Claudia Winkleman-style T's and C's item for the podcast.
We're playing for a Mars bar here, people. Let's not get too caught up in the rules. Ash,
so
higher or lower Jennifer Lawrence than 5?
I'm gonna go higher.
Well, you're wrong.
Oh.
It's lower. She's got 4, and she's only won one of them, which was Silver Linings Playbook.
Really? I
thought
hasn't
she won 2?
Wikipedia says she's only one. We'll double check that. I know she's got 4 nominations, and that's the spirit of the game. Morgan Freeman, Rachel. Higher or lower than 4? Oh, all the same. That's also an option.
Sorry, so is it the same then?
I'm going to guess that this one might be the same.
Well, you know what? You're wrong. Oh. But I've just remembered that it was out there. He's got a higher number. He's got 5. He's only won one, but apparently I might be wrong. So who knows? Ashley, Leonardo DiCaprio, higher or lower than 5? Or the same?
Oh, see. I know he's obviously only won the one, and that was last year. But he must have been...
After a long wait. Poor old Leo.
I'm going to go the same.
I'm afraid he's actually higher. He had 6 nominations before he finally won. Rachel, Tom Hanks, higher or lower than Leonardo DiCaprio?
He's been around for a really long time, and he's been in lots of good stuff. I'm going to guess higher.
It's actually lower. He's only got 5 Oscar nominations, which I know is 5 more than me, but I still thought...
Tom Hanks would have more. 15 less than Meryl Streep.
Yeah, and 0 for Toy Story.
That is outrageous.
Or Toy Story 2. Or Toy Story 3. Moving on from Tom Hanks, Nicole Kidman, higher or lower than Tom Hanks?
Is this for me?
Yeah.
Again, she's someone that's been around a long time, has been in some good stuff. But she's also been in some very bad stuff.
You're not talking about The Stepford Wife, my favourite film of all time.
No, I was thinking particularly more Bewitched.
Oh my God. The longest film ever.
The Hours. Is that what it was?
I'm going to say higher.
You're wrong.
God, I've got
basically, somebody
wrong.
Needs to win a point and then we're done. So let's just go to sudden death here.
How does this work?
Well, all right.
Whoever gets the next one wins.
Yeah, whoever gets the next one. Okay, so we're on to Nicole Kidman with 4. Gwyneth Paltrow, higher or lower?
I know she won. I'm going to guess higher.
That is incorrect.
Oh my God.
We are never going to leave this room.
She was lower. She's only got 1 nomination and 1 win, which is for Shakespeare in Love. I'm starting to feel like I haven't done this research correctly, but we'll find out when we get out of here. We have to post a little asterisk on the podcast. Right, so Ash, Shay, higher or lower than Gwyneth Paltrow or the same on 1?
Higher.
That is correct. Shay's got 2.
Was it for Burlesque?
It was not, sadly, for Burlesque. She won for Moonstruck in 1988, in which she got to say, "Snap out of it." And now that I've done a Cher impression, I'm ready to end this.
It's a good night to leave
We'll be back next week. Laters!